Scott Callon. Thank you, everybody, very much for joining. We really appreciate your time. I'm working off of a presentation that we have on our website, the FY22, so February 2020 Q1 corporate presentation. So let's dive into it. You should know that I have joined with me on the call today Martin Fackler, who is our head of communications and global IR. So turning on the presentation to page 7, we show the highlights of the quarter. Needless to say, we had a strong quarter, and we'll go through the details of that. Very important element of the business model is that it's got durable, effectively kind of structural profitability in it, where our stock earnings, so those are the fixed earnings of the firm, are well above our fixed expenses. I'll touch in detail on what's happened on the stock earnings growth, our SRE. So sustainable real estate is a new segment name that we're using for this year for the value add segment. There's nothing wrong with value add. That's at the heart of what we do. It just felt it was fairly incomplete relative to kind of the mission that we see for ourselves, which is to create value for tenants and customers and communities on a sustainable basis. So that segment has been renamed Sustainable Real Estate, SRE, from this year. Strong flow in earnings in that segment. We think our shares are good value. We announced a share buyback after the close today. 10 million shares, approximately 2% of shares outstanding. I'll touch also on a number of our new activities, one of them which is trying to bring together anime, Japanese animation and real estate in an interesting and powerful way, again, for our customers, tenants, and the local communities. Let's turn to page 8. Shows the financial results of the quarter. Operating profit, OP, up 43%, net income up 34%, EPS up 37%. We did the buyback last year, so that helps to push up EPS slightly over the income. Needless to say, we're on track to achieving our full-year forecast. It was a very strong quarter. I think it's probably the case that given the things that have gone wrong at a number of kind of Japanese real estate operators that haven't kind of executed well, there's probably a misunderstanding of what's happening in the market. If the market is very strong, if you're a good operator, there's an opportunity to deliver a very strong result. So we think it's ongoing, and we are focused on being a good operator. Page 9 shows the segment details. Step through the three, asset management, and the focus on kind of stock earnings, again, kind of the less volatile element of our earnings. Base asset management fees were up 9% year-on-year. In sustainable real estate, rental income was up 5%. The big blowout is gains on sale of our sustainable real estate assets were up 66% year-on-year. And in clean energy, we actually show a minus of 3%. To be clear, the top line actually grew. We have a kind of a tax. Definitely some interesting tax peculiarities, one of them which is that you actually pay taxes a year delayed when it's a local tax. So we brought a very large solar power plant online 2 years ago. We pay more taxes. This year we pay full taxes on it, so that shows up. On the OP line, clean energy is actually down 10%. That's primarily an internal allocation issue. Our SG&A costs are up as we invest for growth. We're allocating those costs to clean energy, so those poor guys show down 10% for the quarter. But in fact, it's going just fine. I'll talk to the specifics of the growth in the clean energy business later in the presentation, but you should know we expect to be relatively flat this year. Next year, with a bunch of new plants coming online at the very end of the year, we expect to see growth profit up 30% in the business. Let's turn to page 11. I'll go quickly through kind of the key elements of a business model. This is something that we talk about, so I won't spend too much time on a regular basis. I won't spend too much time here because I think most people are familiar with this. The business model is a hybrid of stock and flow in earnings. We have kind of the structural profitability that comes from our stock earnings. We also have, you know, diversified flow earnings that we think are very powerful and add returns for our shareholders. So in general, they're about half and half. Over time, we expect to grow the stock to, in our Ichigo 2030 vision, we have us at 60% plus in stock earnings. Page 12, points to another element of the business model, which we effectively have an earnings bank. We create all this value by working really, really hard. We were just hyper-focused on serving tenants and customers. We actually don't realize those gains in the case when we add value to assets until we actually execute on the sale. So we have all these embedded gains that build up over time that are earnings bank for future periods. Page 13 points to the fact that we have these gains that we point to on page 12, but they are seriously underestimate, very systematically underestimate the amount of actual profitability, in other words, and earnings bank for the future periods. In general, we generate returns that are 2 to 3 times higher than what's implied by the third-party appraisals. In the first quarter, as you can see on the bottom right, we came in at 2.9x relative to what the appraisal value, third-party appraisal value suggested what our gains would be on the transactions that we did. 14 points to a new indicator that we introduced 3 months ago as part of our Ichigo 2030 vision, which is to be clear that the focus of the business is on generating not just kind of paper earnings, but actual cash. And so we have tracked our economic operating cash flow over time and continue to do so. You'll see that one of the elements of the business model is a very robust and productive business in terms of its cash generation, and we systematically generate far more cash than actually is. Shows them in the income. It's a way of saying that our income underestimates the cash generation in the business. Page 15 points to what's happening on in terms of our borrowing activity. We continue to borrow very long, about 10 years, 7.5 years in terms of the remaining loan maturity. We now have broken, we're below 100 basis points. We went from 97 basis points on average last period. Period end this quarter, we're at 91 basis points on average for borrowing. Japan is a truly wonderful place to be a borrower if you're credit worthy, and have demonstrated that over time, and we clearly have reached that point. Page 16 points to another key element of our financing strategy, which is to, as I say, we like to borrow long term, we like to borrow fixed. We've also increasingly focused on borrowing on an uncollateralized basis. So we announced following on a new 10-year uncollateralized commitment line from Mizuho Bank last September. We have a new additional line, so 10 million yen, about 100 yen to a dollar, to make the math simple, $100 million of uncollateralized borrowing and a commitment line that we added to is now $200 million. What's nice about this is it gives us utter flexibility to say, we bought an asset, we're borrowing against it. It gives the ability to close quickly in cases where there would be a good asset but a distressed seller. I'll turn then to some of the key elements of what's happened in each of the segments in our new businesses. Starting on page 18, we continue to work to support the growth of our two TSE REITs and the Yoko Ichigo Green, which is a solar Yoko. We think they're all attractive. You can dividend yield on office REIT is 4.1%, on the hotel REIT is 4.8%, on the solar Yoko is 5.7%. As you know, we work for all of our shareholders. We are never going to sacrifice the interests of the REIT or Yoko shareholders, as is kind of unfortunately some of the sponsor abuse that has occurred in Japan. So kind of continue to work hard in growing value for all those shareholders is an important part of our mission. Page 19 shows the activity in sustainable real estate during the first quarter. It continues to be a strong market, no question about it, for sellers. Our gross margin in the quarter was 29%. That's ticked up a little bit from 26% during the full year that closed in February 2019, so 3 months ago. You'll see that Ichigo Owners has increased in its percentage of the acquisitions, 43% of the total. Sales out of Owners, so Owners is a higher turnover business with a lower gross margin. We expect to earn only about kind of typically 10% gross margin on the Owner's business. We're buying new assets in very good locations, empty, though almost all residential. So as you can see, the residential acquisitions during the quarter, which are about half the total acquisitions, those are all Ichigo Owners acquisitions. You buy Central Tokyo, brand new resi, and lease it up very quickly, and then sell it on to cash-rich corporations, high-net-worth individuals who would like a good asset in a good location that's fully leased up by us. So that's the business model. We bought about 9 billion yen in owners in the first quarter. We sold hardly anything. You should know that business clearly has seasonality into it. It is a relatively short holding period. On average, last year was 8 months. Something like that will happen this year, but you end up having kind of $100, $200 million of assets, which you sell typically in the final quarter of the year. And so we expect to see that happen again this year. So as you can see, in terms of total activity, a slight net acquisitions, primarily in residence, followed by office. And we sold equivalent amounts of office. We sold more of hotels. We sold more of retail. We were net buyers of residential, as I say, within the Ichigo owner's vehicle. Page 20 and 21 show some examples of some of the assets that we sold during the quarter in terms of within the SRS, the SRE business, the sustainable real estate business. Again, we're value-add owner-operators. We don't just buy an asset because we think that cap rates are compressing, meaning our prices are going up, or that we can somehow flip it to somebody. There's an intense focus on creating enduring value, because enduring value is enduring, and that's what we care about. The particular asset on page 20 that we sold at a gross margin of 52%, which is rather large, is an interesting example. The reason why we were to buy it at such a good price is because it was unusual, and in general, unusual can be very hard in Japan. So it was an outstanding location, right next to Harajuku Station, which is one of the major entertainment areas in Tokyo. There's a road in Harajuku, which is the main retail road, called Takeshita Dori, or Takeshita Street or Avenue, however you would translate into English. This asset is located about 100 meters away from it, like right there, right bang up next to the station and next to Takeshita Dori. The issue is it was on a curve. And so when you're standing 100 yards, 100 meters away, and you look in Takeshita Dori on this main retail avenue, and you look to see the asset, it's just on the edge of the curb, so you can't see the asset. And so it's there, and it's convenient. I mean, it's kind of like, it's as if I could use analogy, you own an asset 100 yards from Times Square that's in like a courtyard. And so when you're standing in Times Square, you can't see it, but you just walk 100 yards and it's there. And so because one of the potential uses for it, this is a major retail area, was retail, and you had a tenant moving out, it was huge concern on the part of buyers, like, what happens if we can't lease it up? And our perspective on it was, great location, doesn't need to be just retail. In fact, we ended up filling it half office and half retail. And we did the work on it. We're very experienced leasers in terms of our direct leasing. We can lease this up. We did. We spent about a year doing so. When I said unusual is difficult, I mean, things that could possibly make you look bad is also difficult. So buying an asset that's invisible but right there, that's completely empty, is something that could possibly bring some career risk for people. And we step into that. We see full value rather than kind of hide from kind of what happens if this goes wrong. We have a portfolio of assets. We understand what full value should be and how we can get there. But anyway, we acquired it. We fully leased it up. We execute fixed-term leases with new tenants. It creates both flexibility re-tenant over time. So in Japan, there's quasi-rent control. What it meant is when we sell on to a new owner, the owner has the ability to re-tenant if that owner would want to, but these were also long-term leases, which is able to give the new owner, the opportunity to kind of have some security of return for a long period of time. Anyway, very strong transaction. We thought we bought an asset that had been kind of misunderstood and mispriced because it was misunderstood in a high-quality location, and we think the results directly speak to kind of that perspective that we brought to it. Page 21 shows a hotel asset. This is, in a sense, relatively more conventional. This was an asset that had been kind of under-capexed. It was in a very good location. It didn't have the latest in terms of I mean, things you would want to have for a good guest experience. It had kind of old air conditioning, HVAC, water systems. Didn't look as nice as it should be. We put in a diminished amount of CapEx and just fix all those problems. We also do, we like to kill two birds with one stone. We installed LED lighting, which is both a cost efficiency, but also is better for the planet. So we did all these things. The result is we were able to take up ADR 20%. And NII growth because of cost cuts were up 31% because of things like the LED lighting. By the way, electricity is very expensive in Japan, so if you're able to take electricity cost usage down, that's really, really valuable. The gain on sale was, again, substantially higher than the unrealized gains that were the appraisers thought we were going to get on it. The gross margin on this was 29%. Page 22. Shows some new initiatives within the sustainable real estate business. We are seeking to learn, you know, what we can wherever we can. That's true in Japan. It's also true globally. So one of the things that we did, and those of you who are familiar with us, Ichigo is always trying to get better, full stop, and we're very systematic about it. We do not make large kind of new initiatives. New initiatives are risky. You know, before you do something large and new, why don't you do something small and new? And so we do something small and new, and if we can demonstrate success with it, we'll expand it sometimes very, very rapidly. So it's an interesting question to us because we think we have some capability in value add that is durable and demonstrated in Japan. And so we actually went to the U.S. To see what we could learn in the U.S. That would possibly be additive. So are they doing things in the U.S. that are different from what we would do in Japan that we could learn from? We also wanted to see, are they doing things in the U.S. that maybe are they not doing things in the U.S. that maybe we're doing in Japan that would possibly be transportable there? I think the conclusion is, you know, we didn't learn anything in particular. Guys, and there are value add real estate guys in the U.S. They do the same sorts of things that we would want them to do. This wasn't we invested. We put actually real money into it, not a ton given the size of our balance sheet. The investment worked out very, very well. So the good news is we thought a research gain on it. We also got an IRR on the investment of about 68%. So that worked out just fine. We have another investment, hotel investment. We did two of them, both $5 million each. So these are small investments. But, you know, we're trying to get paid to learn, and we think we delivered on that with this. We've also moved offshore in the self-storage business. And we acquired a 49% holding in a storage business in Taiwan. Again, to try to learn what's there and also possibly deliver, we think the opportunity to deliver what we do in Japan in the Taiwanese market is interesting. We think there are also some cross-border opportunities there. And so the point is that we're continuing to work to see if there are opportunities for us to grow in a sensible way and deliver value to people in U.S. hotels and Taiwan self-storage would be examples of that. Page 23, turning to the clean energy business. I touched on this earlier. As you can see on the page, most of the plants are becoming online this year. It's November, January, February. That means they're not going to contribute very much. You should know that the winter, both because of snow and because of typically higher cloud cover and less solar production, means that you don't get very much generated during those months. So the seasonality in solar power production, the implication is that we expect to be relatively flat this year. But we'll see a 30% increase in the gross profit in this business next year. Page 24 shows the full development roadmap, which takes us up 94% from current production in fiscal year 2023, February 2023. Page 25, turning to some of the new things that we're doing to continue to expand our capabilities. We acquired a hotel operator. In this quarter, we're up and running with three hotels. We expect it to be up to seven hotels by August end. I mean, this is something we're doing because we are a very active, very hands-on owner. We think it is actually valuable to have an operator as a test bed for us to implement things. One of the challenges we found out over time is that we may have, given the large, this kind of the built experience we have in hotels, we work with a number of operators, In some cases, we have more experience than the operator. We think something is a good idea, but in order to convince them, we think we've come to understand that it might be actually better to have our own hotel operator, where we can test things and demonstrate their success and kind of therefore roll them out to our operator network. So we think there's both kind of profitability here that will be justified. This is a non-asset business, it's an operational business. We also think it's an opportunity for us to drive kind of best practices through our total kind of operator network. Within that, we have begun to deploy Prepara, which is a hotel, AI-based hotel revenue management system. It's currently deployed at 15 of our hotels. Things are going very well. We are experiencing increased NOI, in other words, higher revenue generation from the hotels within the Prepara network. And again, this is something that we expect to possibly roll out externally in order to drive a non-asset you know, business for ourselves. So, you know, the concept is to take capabilities that we use in ourselves. I mean, I think everyone's favorite example of this is Amazon AWS. Amazon needed to have, you know, world-class computers. They figured out they could leverage, you know, that capability and build more scale for themselves and therefore build economies of scale and better cost efficiencies for themselves by selling them externally. That's very specifically the way we're thinking about Prepara. Turning to page 26, another new business entry. This one's pretty unusual. Japan it's got a very specific element of, you know, its entertainment culture called animation, which is unique and interesting and important. And we think there's an opportunity for us to combine that with real estate. Very specifically, and I'm sorry, on the page it says anime plus retail synergies. It should have said anime and real estate synergies. Very specifically, we're working to go beyond the classic relationship between owners and tenants, which is classically tenants don't ever want to see the owner. And, you know, that makes sense if the owner is not going to do anything, be of any help, but it's just kind of in the way. We're trying to build some capability we think is significant to serve our tenants in any way possible. And so very specifically, we own an asset in Akihabara, which is kind of the heart of Japan's anime subculture, called the Akihabara Culture Zone. This is an entire building dedicated to anime. We think that the work we're doing on a new anime series with Mamoru Oshii, who is one of Japan's most famous anime directors, he's the director for Ghost in the Shell, which had, you know, extraordinary success globally. We think there is both an opportunity to monetize our involvement in animation production, but it's not going to end in that. We think there is ability to integrate this into the work we're doing in this kind of anime landmark in Akihabara, which is in central Tokyo. So that's already begun. So the announcement was held there. We're beginning activities with tenants talking about kind of character licensing. We're going beyond your classic hands-off kind of owner relationship with tenants, being highly collaborative with tenants and with neighborhoods. And speaking of neighborhoods, turning to page 27, another new initiative we have is we have become a key investor in a new real-world augmented reality game called Tsubasa Plus, which combines a Japanese soccer manga. Effectively kind of, how would you describe manga? Comic books, Japanese comics books, with globally avatars of world-class soccer, or I'm American, you can probably tell from my accent, football, as we say almost everywhere else, football players globally. We think, I mean, this is effectively a version similar to Pokemon Go. Very, very interesting opportunities to both to make money on the game itself, but to kind of drive activity around our real estate assets. Again, we think this is an interesting way to go beyond kind of the classic, we have boxes and here are the boxes. It's a way of building out capability, which is not just infrastructure hardware, infrastructure software in terms of serving the interests of people. So as you see on the page, we think this hits boxes, including entertainment, sports, culture, tourism, other would be games. Finally, on page 28, we announced a buyback after the close today, 3 billion yen, so approximately $30 million U.S., 2% of shares outstanding. We did buybacks, two of them, 1.5 billion yen each in 2017. We did a buyback in 2018. We're following on that with a buyback that we announced today that we'll conduct over the next few months. Page 29, from 30 to page 33, talks about our commitment to ESG. And this has become, you know, relatively popular, you know, as people kind of, you know, they call it greenwash. I mean, this is something that's been at the heart of the firm for years. At the end of the day, we think you serve kind of citizens and communities first, and if you do that, you serve your shareholders. And so we have, you know, this is material we've presented before, so I won't go through it in detail, but we have, you know, ongoing commitments and deliverables in environmentally and socially and on a governance basis that we think are really important and we'll continue to deliver for all of you. So those is the prepared presentation. I'm happy now to switch to Q&A. Any questions and or input are very, very welcome. We work for you. If you have a question, please go ahead and press star, then one. If you want to withdraw a question, you can press star, then two. But again, any questions or comments, star, then one. Looks like we have a question from Will Montgomery at CLSA. Will, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Will.
Sure. Hi. Thanks, Scott. Pretty interesting presentation and good set of numbers. I did listen to the Japanese, so this is sort of a confirmation of some of the things that were said there. If you could give 2 points. So just, yeah, the big question about profitability going forward, if you increase owners, you know, if you're buying more assets for the owner's business, that those profits are lower. You can kind of address, you know, what you think. You know, this year looks pretty good. Obviously, we're still in a pretty strong market, but where those may be heading over the next year? Just your opinion on that, and your plans are stated. Typically, you try to buy 70 to 80 billion in new acquisitions each year. Is that the pace? Is that the right pace going forward? Any comments on there? So just sort of on profitability and your acquisition plans in your core value-add business. And then second, this was also asked, and I think it's worth maybe getting your views on how you're going to monetize these IT investments, what types of monetization, what the profitability is going to potentially be. And also, this wasn't asked, I'm just wondering, what's the rough investment size? You know, what kind of capital commitment are you making now, and you know how will that be, you know, in terms of cash flow over the next couple of years? Is it a little bit now, test the waters, and then it gets really big, or just sort of your thoughts on how that's going to pan out?
Okay, thanks. So let me start with profitability and kind of our sustainable real estate business and what the acquisition pipeline looks like. So thanks for joining the Japanese call and the English call. So the point that was raised on the Japanese call by one of the analysts was, okay, so your gross margin, and so I'm on page 19, is 29%, and the Ichigo Owners business is a lower margin business, so if you're doing more in Ichigo Owners, doesn't imply that your gross margin goes down. Yes. So that's the answer. So let's get through that, though, because I think there was probably some skepticism there that wasn't warranted. So the first point is that, and I'm sorry, I didn't make this point, so this is probably worth doing. Things have gotten a little bit wobbly for weaker borrowers. So there's no question that banks are getting more selective. It's who they want to loan to. They're worried. They don't want to go. They don't want to lend to weaker borrowers if we're kind of end of cycle or top of cycle. And the implication of that is that in the owner's business, where we typically buy brand new residential, Tokyo residential, and central locations and great locations, is the developers for that are going to the banks, and the developers don't have our business model, and they typically don't have our creditworthiness. They don't have the stock earnings in a business model, so they have a 100% full business model. And so the banks are like, well, okay, you're building this thing. You're going to deliver it to market in 18 months. Who's the buyer? And so the developers want to lock in a buyer. And so the result of that is that we are increasing again the developers saying, look, we'd like you to step in and effectively provide credit support. And it's like, okay, that's fine, but we deserve to get paid for that. So we think the gross margin in the owner's business is going up from kind of 10% to maybe 15 to 20% on the assets doing. The good news is our end clients are getting the same good at market price. Effectively, it's the developers who are having to eat margin in order to kind of to fulfill the project. So just, you know, we think the owner's margin is going up. Now, stepping back to the bigger issue, which is, okay, so isn't a bad thing if you have a 30% gross margin business, which is the broader, longer-term value-add, sustainable real estate business. You've got the sub-business called Ichigo Owners, which is maybe it's a 15% margin, but still half the margin of the bigger business. Doesn't that imply profitability goes down? Well, it does if turnover stays the same. In reality, the core sustainable real estate business is really kind of these days like a three- to five-year hold, with kind of a 30 to 50% gross margin. The owner's business, as I'm telling you, is effectively becoming a 15% gross margin business with an average 8-month hold. So if you run those numbers, you end up being more profitable. And of course, that's the point. We understand that total profitability is not gross margin, it's gross margin times turnover. And of course, the RE formula is net margin times turnover times times leverage. So we don't see any fall off in total profitability. It's a good thing, not a bad thing, that we're increasing turnover because it makes us more capital efficient. I think you should feel good about kind of the underlying trends in our business. Now, having said that, look, we do not believe in predicting the future. I've probably said this 10 times years on this call, so we're going to be saying it 11 times. You know, our view on this is don't predict, prepare. So if the market falls out of bed, the market falls out of bed. You know, we'll be ready for it. And in a sense, some things are already happening that other people aren't ready for. I mean, as I say, the lending market has gotten more selective. It's beginning to impact other players in the market. It's not impacting us because we're ready for it in terms of our capital capabilities, in terms of our structural ability to deliver value add, in terms of underlying strengths of our business model, which is not totally dependent on flow activity. Is that okay on profitability? Anything that I missed here before I turn to the acquisition pipeline?
Yeah, I guess the obvious kind of question is, does this impact, maybe some of the pricing in any of the other assets? Are maybe buyers getting a little, harder to find financing, so they can't come up with such aggressive bids, and are sellers starting to notice that, and maybe they're going to be a little bit more willing to sell at more reasonable cap rates? Are we going to see this spread elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're not in the prediction business, but let me tell you what's happening, because I don't have to predict it. If your business model is you buy bulk and sell it off to individuals, you're beginning to run into rocks, right? Because individuals are classic examples of being less creditworthy borrowers. So this whole thing of kind of trying to sell apartments to salarymen, and that's a really, really tough business model. We own good assets. We improve them. One of the things that's happening in the owner's business that's reflecting that is we are beginning to shift. And an owner doesn't have, typically cash-rich corporations and high net worth. So it's got very creditworthy clients. But owners are shifting towards bigger institutions. What we're finding is the original business model for the business was we're going to deliver, assets one by one to cash-rich companies and high net worth. And it turned out that that's a business model that's incredibly viable. There's another business model that we didn't expect to find, but is what we think is going to be the prime driver of earnings this year and was a big driver of earnings last year, which is, you know, actually, there's still a wall of money. There is a huge hunger for high-quality yield delivering assets in Japan. JGBs are shrinking. There's negative rates. And big institutions, they don't want and they can't really afford to spend, you know, I mean, they don't want to be buying $5 million at a time. They want to be buying $50 million to $100 million at a minimum at a time. So we are kind of accumulating assets, and you should expect to see that this year. And then, you know, at the end of the year, we sell $100 million. That's what we did last year. We sell $200 million, two different transactions, for example. So that, you know, clearly we are seeing activity where parts of the market, buyers, I shouldn't say parts of the market, parts of the buyer market is getting distressed. We haven't seen any increase in cap rates. They've been substituted for by significant ongoing appetite from Japanese institutions, life insurers, anybody wants a return. We're seeing we're seeing global money coming to Japan, picking up again. Japan is, you know, increasingly seen as kind of stable in a world that feels less stable. So at the moment, I think, you know, the right answer to your question is a decrease in the number of buyers, but no decreasing in pricing because the creditworthy buyers are still very, very focused on accumulating assets. And reasons are pretty obvious. I mean, you know, you can borrow 70% LTV, 10 years for almost nothing, for assets that deliver extraordinary returns relative to anything else in terms of yen yield. You can flip it into a global currency yield through a very liquid FX swap market if you want to take your yen risk out of it. In a world where there's a shortage of yield, Japanese real estate is extraordinary, compelling value. Nothing has changed. If it does change, you know, we'll adjust to it. But that you know, nothing has changed at this point. Cap rates are not going up.
Got it. Thank you.
That's not a prediction. I mean, they haven't gone up, meaning, you know, cap rates have not gone up. I suspect there probably is a misunderstanding of that because so much stuff is happening in the world right now that feels confusing and anxiety-creating. And it's confusing and anxiety-creating for us also. But in our core area of activity, you just have these very, very durable returns. Japan has record low unemployment. It has no inflation to speak of. It has economic stability, social stability, political stability, for better or for worse, price stability. You know, the assets we own are very good assets in very good locations. You know, people worry about population decline. That's a huge issue. In rural areas, it's not, you know, we're primarily active in Tokyo. It's not an issue in Tokyo. Even kind of things like office space demand is going up very substantially because of increase in office space for workers. So the environment that we're operating right now is very strong. We're aware of it. We do not count on it. But there are currently no signs of anything non-fundamental occurring. Fundamentally strong and therefore in reality strong in terms of price activity and transaction activity. Turning acquisition pipeline, I mean, look, we bought about $200 million of assets in the quarter. You probably will get another $200 million of assets in the second quarter. We talk internally with our guys, go try to buy $700 million to $800 million of assets this year, but to be very clear, that's because you want your asset acquisition guys to have kind of, you want to have a stick to beat them with, right? And so, you know, you can't just say, you know, go buy however many assets you want to buy. You need to give them a goal. But at the end of the day, the goal is to go find assets so that the management team can decide if we want to buy them. And so there is never our goal is to buy $700 million, therefore let's buy $700 million. In reality, the goal is to buy the greatest number of assets at the lowest possible price that we think that we can add value to. And the good news is we're finding assets to buy. And that's coming in higher than expectations. So we think the forward kind of return pipeline. And to be clear, you know, the owner's pipeline, I told you, is really kind of an eight-month sort of pipeline, so we have 8 months availability there. The value add, the broader kind of core sustainable real estate platform is kind of more 3 to 5 years, kind of do we have a view of profitability there. We have all these embedded gains, and we have assets that we're looking to sell that we think we can sell at good prices. So, I mean, it really comes to kind of like a two-year view on profitability, not a 20-year view. Now, having said that, you know, if you're running 7-Eleven Walmart, you don't know if people are going to come to your stores tomorrow. They do because, you know, 7-Eleven Walmart provide very good value, and, you know, people go to their stores, right? So we do have a longer ability to predict what profitability looks like, in a sense, predictions in quotes. But at the end of the day, we're going to have ongoing value as a company because we deliver ongoing value to our tenants and our customers. And so you should look at very hard at our ability to do that. And that's why we continue to invest in new ways to create value. I'll move from there to your question about investment, but go ahead and tell me whether or not I've answered your question.
Yeah, that's very good.
Okay. So look, I mean, you actually mentioned IT, but I think you're also you're referring to the animation and game investments too, right?
Yeah, I just broadly lumped those together, yes.
Okay. And we think of them as three different threats. So I think I said on the last call, if we succeed with our Ichigo 2030 vision, which has become a sustainable infrastructure company, 10 years from now we'll probably be thought of as a sustainable infrastructure IT company. There is a major thread that is, you know, now multi-years in the making, and prepare our AI hotel system would be an example of something we started a couple years ago, which are now, you know, we developed, we succeeded, we're now in actual production with it. It's kind of a longer thread in terms of the IT spend. IT, I think we'll do about kind of a, and to be clear, this is where Ichigo, right? Ichigo never spends a ton of money. We're so focused on, you know, on earning as much as we can on the smallest possible investment. So, you know, think a couple of $1 million a year going, you know, brand new into IT that we think we'll get very good value from that. And that'll be ongoing. And if there are reasons to spend more because we think there are very high returns from it, we'll do that. You know, for better or for worse, we're not, you know, WeWork or the We Company or Uber, meaning, you know, we're never going to put $1 billion into something because we think, you know, we could possibly turn profitable. It's just not who we are. But what I think you can expect from us is a relentless focus on cash generation from delivering value to tenants and customers, and clearly IT is a tool that we think is available to us. We think many of our competitors are not using it very well, and we're going to do new things. So that's a broad umbrella. With respect to animation and the game investments, I'm going to duck and cover on that because we have conversations with kind of our partners in it. They don't want us to talk about which we're putting into it, but these are not a large amount. So, you know, this is classic Ichigo is doing an entry in a new area with relatively small amounts to figure out if something be done. The game investment is relatively bigger because it's global, but these are not particularly big amounts. Sorry, I'm doing a little bit of deck and cover on it, but you don't have to worry about us blowing a hole on anything. These are relatively small amounts.
And monetization, you're selling rights to these characters overseas, and you're selling products. Some of your tenants are going to be selling some of the products in their facilities. These are sort of the practical ways.
Yeah, I mean, let's divide these up. So the animation one is much more straightforward. I mean, look, we've got a valuable building in Akihabara, which is, you know, regarded within Japan as kind of a landmark for anime, but it's not known without kind of throughout the world. So all this inbound traffic, you know, investing in that to make that kind of a clear kind of stellar source of anime in Japan. It's something that we'd like to do. So how does that tie into this new animation series? Well, the business model on that one is fairly straightforward, Will. I mean, the animation series itself, Oshii Kantoku, so director Mamoru Oshii, is developing a brand new series. There is global demand for it. And we think we're going to make a very good return on just selling it to Netflix, Amazon Prime, whoever. You know, Tencent. You know, we will sell global rights to this. So we think we'll get our money back at least on that. And then we are going to use it to, we've already having events at our building in Akihabara. We've got kind of character sales and all that sort of thing that are going on there. We've got all these tenants that are linked to anime. If you haven't been to the building, I think you'll find it interesting if you go there. You know, we're part of the return on their sales. So there's an experiment going on here with what can we do new and different that takes us beyond, as I said, the classic, you know, we're the owner and you never want to see our face, you know, so we have these developing these intimate relationships with our tenants. There's also, you know, that's one element where we think we're going to do reasonably well, but it's an experiment. We'll find out together. So we think we get all our money back plus more and possibly, you know, possibly a lot more. I mean, that's kind of the very nature of if the animation series itself ends up being a big hit, we'll do very, very well on it. You know, but in a small way. So if you take a look at the hotel investment we did in the U.S., you know, that was a great investment, page 22, but it, you know, it delivers kind of $3.5 million. It doesn't change who we are, but you know, you can do a small investment and have very high returns on it. And these are small investments. So, but the business model on that one is you sell the animation products, you sell it globally, you get stream, you know, you sell the streaming rights and all that sort of thing, you make money on that, and you also link into the real estate business, and then you see where you can take that. So it's an initial entry into that area. The game is, you know, similar in terms of the business model. You're selling kind of sponsorship rights and things like that. Hundreds of millions of dollars are spent by McDonald's, for example, for Pokemon Go to get, you know, then Pokemon to send people towards McDonald's. They were hundreds of millions of dollars spent by Starbucks. We don't expect this is going to generate hundreds of millions of dollars, but, you know, there's an element of that to it. We were also putting, there's branding. You know, we're going to have Ichigo sites all over this game. We're going to put them, people are going to be coming to our stadiums, to our assets all over Japan. They're asking us if we want to do this globally. So there are elements there that are kind of about branding, et cetera. That business model is less clear. I mean, which is to say, it's possibly a massive hit, or it isn't, which is why the amount of money that needs to go into it needs to be smaller. You know, we'll all be very, very blessed if this ends up being Pokemon Go 2. Wouldn't count on it. You know, that's deeply unrealistic. But you know, there is some option value on this. It would be very, very interesting. But we will be driving traffic to our assets, and we'll see. And so we're going to find out. You know, Ichigo invests in new areas. It tries to do it in a way where we have a systematic in terms of our hypothesis about what could work and what not, and then we kind of test those hypotheses against the reality that emerges. Did I answer your question on the business models on those?
That did. Thank you.
All right. Can I add one thing, Will? This is Martin talking. If you look at the anime, too, usually in Japan you have these production committees where you have, say, 10 or 12 investors on the committee, and they share the rights, and it's often the case that one person gets the DVD rights or the CD rights or the toy rights or whatever. We're a single investor with this series with Mamoru Oshii, so essentially all the rights are, you know, with us. We don't divide them amongst the members of a production committee. Also, if you talk with the folks in Ichigo Animation, you know, there's a huge demand for this stuff in Asia. You know, they expect to make as much money in China as they do in Japan. North America, maybe half as much again. But the thing with the 12-part series is it really hits a sweet spot for, like, Netflix or Crunchyroll or some of these streaming services that are interested in this kind of content in the U.S. You know, a one-off movie is less interesting to them, but if you have a 12-part series, then they can, you know, make the first two episodes free, and then you have to charge for the next 10 episodes. And so there really is a lot of potential, we hope, with this one. I just wanted to throw that in there. Thanks.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Will.
We're happy to take a question or input from anybody. Again, you press star one. Paul from Martin Curry?
Yes, hi. Thanks, Scott. Good presentation. Just got a question, and I'm just reading in the press, and I'm sure you saw it, the HIS looking to make a takeover on Unizo.
Yeah.
And it looks, you know, it looks very cheap, and it looks like it's the kind of asset that you would like to pick up. And I'm not going to ask you, on that deal per se, but do you see any opportunities, as you have in the past, to pick up novel businesses and really rip out the real estate part of it?
Okay, I'm not going to use the word rip out.
Well, look, okay. I mean, it's a good question, and it's the ongoing question. Everybody's favorite, including ours, is to be the white knight. It's just so much easier to do a friendly transaction. And look, we're always looking for ways to be helpful. And I mean, to talk about something that's public and since it's out there, it's easy to talk about. So, this animation series production. The guys in the Japanese anime business are sick and tired of having, animation by committee. It lowers the quality of the product. It slows everything down. It is an incredible pain in the neck. And so, in a sense, we stepped in to deliver something that is unavailable in the market. We'll be a single buyer. We'll be reliable. We'll be trustworthy. We had an ability, as I say, to find some synergies, we think, in our real estate business. But there may be ongoing legs for this as an approach. You should think about Ichigo because this is the way we think about ourselves. Is you've got this core business which is continuing to evolve and strengthen, and there's a series of small bets which have option value on, and we're very focused on going into non-real estate cycle, non-asset, very high return business as a small initiatives in those areas. So going back to your question, do we want to do bolt-on activity? Yes. Are there opportunities available? At that point, I'm going to go a little bit cagey on you. Maybe, hopefully. We'll see.
Okay. And can I ask one more question?
Yeah, of course.
The Sakura REIT with the merger plan to with Mirai Corporation.
Yeah.
Is there anything, it's been a long time since we've seen anything on REIT against REIT. Is there any opportunity for you going forward and to perhaps participate in some form, or do you think that is going to be fallow ground?
Yeah, it's funny, Paul. I'm so sorry for this. We actually had a conversation about this today, about are we going to talk about these things, and the answer was no, because if we talk about them, and then, let's imagine that we talk about this particular case, and then in the future, you ask me on a call, what about this case, and I go, I can't talk about it. It's like, oh, Ichigo's involved, so we've gone for the radio silence approach on this one, so I'm going to stay very, very general, but look, we actually were involved in a white knight and created as a white knight, both in creating the original Ichigo Office REIT and then absorbing in 2008, and then absorbing the fund creation residential REIT in 2011. Are we interested in doing activities like this? Yes. Have we become, and this has changed, this is a powerful and this is important, have we become somebody that will get invited to these conversations? Absolutely yes. And that was not true 5 years ago. Those deals in 2008, 2011 were effectively self-created by us. Now, when stuff happens in the market, people do come to us. So, you should know we have the ability to look at all these transactions. And we do. And I think that's, basically all I can say on the topic. But yeah, they're hopefully our things to be done.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And happy to take anything from anybody. It's *1. We may be done. Okay, let's call ourselves done. Thank you, everybody. We're grateful for your time, and it's an honor and a privilege to work for all of you. Have a good day.